I know this rose will open. I know my fear will burn away. I know my soul will unfurl its wings. I know this rose will open. Trusting life means that we believe the flower will bloom, that fear will dissipate, that the soul will be replenished. Now, this is basic stuff for ministers like me. We're peddlers of this stuff. We're here to tell you that, yes, the sun will rise again tomorrow, that love will ultimately destroy fear, and that your participation, each and every one of you, your participation in this matters, that you are as beautiful and perfect as a rose, that you will blossom and bloom even in challenging times. And that's all true. It's true. I believe it. That's why I'm here. And it's March 2025, and everything that's going on is going on. The rules for the world as we knew it seem to be changing. The world that those comforting ideas seem made for. And I don't know about you, but there seems to be so much happening every single day. There's this endless supply of news that I can't keep up with it. And you know what? I'm not sure I should. I think it might be toxic to take it all in. So how can I come here this morning, stand up and tell you to trust life? Well, the truth is we subscribe to this Soul Matters curriculum, program, resources, and their theme for this month was trust. So I put this in the worship schedule a few months ago, so I'm not sure I would have chosen it for this morning, but it was there, and it was the challenge for today. How do we talk about trusting life? You know, it reminds me of, this is what I don't want to be. I remember my mother, who is deathly afraid of any kind of thrill ride. We went to Disneyland several years ago, and I promised her that the Pirates of the Caribbean ride was not a thrill ride. It was just a lot of fun scenery. And then we get on the boat, and I remember those two hills in the dark, splashing with water, no less. So she's forgiven me at this point, I think. But. Jeannie Harrison Nuwajar tells us, God and life are to be trusted. Not trusted to shield us from pain and loss and confusion, but trusted to sustain us through such passages, to provide us with all we need to endure till another day. This is a pretty radical claim in a time like this one, or those of you that have experienced some unimaginable grief in your life. When the world is unpredictable, when institutions fail us, when leaders betray our trust, when cruelty seems to win the day, how do we sustain a belief in life being trustworthy? So this was my challenge, and so I've been thinking about this a lot. And what I've decided is that real trust is not a naive optimism that everything will turn out well. We know that may not always be the case. At the moment, we're worried about federal workers being laid off without warning, DEI departments being dismantled, ICE agents pulling apart immigrant lives, worrying about the people of Gaza, about trans people living in fear, about people in the Ukraine, on and on and on. Real trust does not ignore these concerns. Real trust is a willingness to live fully despite all this uncertainty. Trusting life is not about ignoring real dangers. It is about remaining open even when the path ahead is unclear. It's about paying attention, as Bob was sharing with us during our time for all ages, to those coinciding moments of life, the relationships and events that remind us of our connection to one another. When we pay attention, when we are open to life and what life shows us, then we find a way forward, even when it's hard. The Quakers talk about the idea that the way will open, and then we proceed as the way opens. Trust isn't about certainty. It's about a willingness to move forward when that way forward is revealed. So Philip Booth offers us an image in his poem, First Lesson. He says, "Lie back. Spread your arms wide and let go. Lie gently and wide to the light year stars, and the sea will hold you." You know that feeling when you're on a pool or on the ocean, in a pond, and you lie back and you float, when you're held by something that you can't see, but it holds you anyway. And knowing that there is danger there, you could slip under the water. Maybe you can't even quite see where you're floating. Maybe you've got no control over the destination, but you know that you are held in some way nonetheless. When we trust life, there is flotation involved. We're not always in control of the outcome, where we're going to go, but we trust that the forces around us, nature, the interactions with our fellow human beings, God, if that idea is meaningful for you, all these things can act as something greater than our individual will. And that something greater can hold us if we find harmony with it. This is not passivity, but an active, courageous orientation to existence based in trust. And yet, we also know that trust is fragile. Promises can be broken. Justice can be delayed. What we put faith in, even when it seems like a safe bet, like an almost 250-year-old national institution of democracy, anything that we think is going to be there forever may not be. It can be at risk. An active orientation to life requires that we acknowledge these risks and injustices when we witness them. So I remember the congregation I was serving before. When I first got there, I got there in August of 2016, and then a certain president was elected right thereafter. And then I got to this congregation, by the way, just before that president. But there's something about me going to congregations and that happening, so maybe I should just stop that. But I was there, and we had a visitor, and the person was really angry one Sunday. And they came to me after the service, and they said, "I came here looking for hope, and what I'm getting is people keep talking about what's happening in the world. I don't want to hear it." And I think that's not uncommon. Sometimes people will come to a UU congregation thinking they will get just a prolonged internal spiritual experience. And hopefully that is part of what they get. But also our tradition calls us to actively love the world around us. And that means that we do have to name what's happening, and that we are called to put our trust in and work for justice. It's part of who we are. Reverend David O. Rankin tells a story about this. He says, in 1968, I delivered a sermon prior to the presidential election. It was not a partisan plea, since I was not overly impressed with either Richard Nixon or Hubert Humphrey. Instead, I merely recommended that I hoped everyone would vote for the most intelligent, experienced, and compassionate candidate. So imagine my surprise when a man confronted me in the reception line and angrily shouted, "How dare you use the pulpit to support Hubert Humphrey?" Now remember, he hadn't named a name. Sometimes the side of justice is an obvious one, even to those on the other side of it. Trusting life for me at the moment means trusting in the tradition, this tradition of Unitarian Universalism that I have woven into the fabric of my life. And that means we don't just passively wait this out. We act. We resist. Not out of a desire to be political, but out of a desire to be just. So as Louise shared with us in our joys and sorrows portion of the service, a few of us had the opportunity to be at the March for Dignity in downtown Los Angeles yesterday, along with, I haven't heard the total count, but it seemed like thousands, I was certainly hundreds. Always hard to tell when you're in a great big crowd like that. All these people that had come out on a Saturday to be together and to say that there was, should be dignity for all, and particularly at this moment in time, dignity for immigrants in our policies and what we do as human beings. And I got there early, and I had a chance to talk with a woman I didn't know, but she was holding a sign that read, "Humanity and planet first, deport greed instead." And I liked that, so I was chatting with her, and she was quite the sage, because she told me right away, she said, "We're all connected. Everything is interconnected. You hurt one group, you hurt another. They just don't understand that." And I got it. I got what she was saying. I mean, she really, I'm sure she may not even known who Unitarian Universalists were, but she was definitely paraphrasing a lot of UU theology that is also woven into so many other people's philosophical and theological traditions. But there she was, just so eloquently and beautifully and honestly saying that out there on that street. And the idea that they don't get it, they being the people in power, people making decisions, really don't understand that when you hurt one group of people, you ultimately hurt all of us, including them, themselves. But people at that march understood that. And we were all there in that space making a lot of noise, getting on to a lot of news cameras because we want to spread the word. And that is one thing that we have to trust in at this time, the value in making a lot of noise. So making a lot of noise, and then there's what Myrna was talking about, actually in both of the readings that she shared today, this quiet duck just lost to the world. And also Ramadan and the idea of going into that holy cave and having that experience of soul rejuvenation. And I've been looking for those moments, those little metaphorical caves that I can find for myself. Because the truth is, and you may find this too at this particular moment in time, the things that worked for you a couple months ago may not work exactly for you right now. You know, something you might have found soothing back in, you know, September of last year may be like, okay, that's not enough. I need something else. So we're all finding our things, right? So I'm going to share with you a little, if Eric will cue up the video, just a little thing that I found that's been helping me this month. So there's an animal called the tapir, and it's it has the body of a pig. And there she is. She's got the body of a pig, and she's got a little sort of abbreviated elephant trunk that she explores with. And she's kind of related between a horse and a rhinoceros. And tapirs are endangered here in North America, actually everywhere, but they used to be in North America. They don't really exist here at all except in captivity. And you can find them in Central and South America. But she was born, I think, February 20th at the zoo in Tacoma, Washington. And they put updates on there from day to day. And I've been watching this little life form that's so innocent that every single thing that she experiences is new for her. It's a learning experience. She gets the zoomies here. She's just full of joy that bubbles over. And her world is all based on trust. Trust of her mother and trust of the keepers. And she has no reason to think otherwise. And I found my wounded spirit has been soothed just by seeing her. Everything for her is joyful and wondrous and possible. And it reminds me that she does live in the same world that we all live in. We share that world. And so Ume is her name. So that's one of my little things that I found, one of my metaphorical holy caves that I can go into and remind myself of who I am and what there is in this world. And I think that's what we all need to do right now, is find those places of beauty and inspiration amongst all this chaos. It might be in the beauty of a rose opening. It might be anything that burns away the fear, that drives the soul to unfurl its wings. Whether we call it hope, whether we call it God, whether we call it our own creativity, I'm not interested in what you call it and policing what you call it. What I want us all to be able to do is find those points of connection so that we are called back to life over and over again. And that little creature has been calling me back, as unlikely as it is, for the last couple weeks. And it is that reminder, I think, of calling ourselves back to life, of learning to trust life again, is one of the reasons I think we come to this place Sunday after Sunday, despite the death of loved ones, or financial problems, or marital conflict, or health challenges, or chaotic politics, or violations of human rights. Whatever comes our way, life's gifts can be easy to miss in the middle of all of that. But remember, they might be found in the charm of an unusual animal just beginning life. They might bubble up in a chance encounter that reminds us how we're all connected, or a moment of sweet surrender where, yes, the world may still be falling apart, but you nonetheless get a moment of well-earned sleep and peace. And I believe that in a loving community, we help one another to not lose faith in life, even when it's really, really hard. Brian Doyle writes, "All you can do is face the world with quiet grace and hope you make a sliver of difference. You must trust in that which does not make sense." Trusting life it's not a guarantee that everything will be okay. I mean, it doesn't really make sense if you think about it too rationally. But I believe it's based in the knowledge that love matters still, that justice is still worth fighting for, that small acts of kindness and connection ripple outward in ways that are beyond our knowing. We trust that love will sustain us, that even when the path is full of obstacles, even when the journey will be a long march through treacherous land, we will nonetheless eventually find our way, folks. And the secret of the journey is that the rose will open not when we reach our destination, but sooner. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe even today. Maybe it already has, if we just take the time to notice.